Narragansett's Information Station, 1540 WADK. It's the Open Forum on 1540 WADK. Call 846-1028, 846-1028. Now, the Open Forum on 1540 WADK.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Open Forum. My name is Frank Presence. And on the line joining us is Cheryl Martone. And Cheryl is the director of CASA Volunteer Program. CASA stands for Court Appointed Special Advocates for Children. And Rhode Island CASA, Cheryl, if I'm correct, was the second of 900 and some odd similar organizations that was established in this country.
That's correct. Soon after the first program was organized in 1977 in Seattle, Washington, Rhode Island came on board and established its own program. There was a recognition of the value of what was being pioneered out in Seattle, and so Rhode Island was quick to follow suit, and we've been providing this service to kids who are in the child welfare system and also have cases before Rhode Island Family Court for just about 40 years now.
So nationally, what I've read, it's about 700,000 kids who are served through programs like this. And also in kids who go through the courts, or cases that go through the courts, about 2,000 children die each year.
It's pretty tragic.
Yeah. What are the numbers in Rhode Island?
So in Rhode Island, actually I just got an update on numbers yesterday, the kids that are served by our program, and it's now well over 2,700 that we're representing in the Rhode Island CASA program. It's really tragic. I don't have the exact number of recent fatalities, but I think that anyone who's been following the recent news reports that have come out over the last year that have really focused attention on what's happening in our child welfare system, which is quite overburdened at this time, it really has a sense of what's going on, and it really underscores the need for people who can serve as advocates and be completely focused just on the welfare of these children, because they can get lost in the system.
So let's put it in perspective a little bit. 2,700 kids who have gone through the system, that doesn't come close to the number of kids who are probably who just are in situations where nobody comes forward.
And there's no way of knowing that, but that's true. I mean, it could be a gross underrepresentation of what's happening out there. These are cases that have been investigated by DCYF and found to be what they call founded and in need of providing services of some kind to the family, and have actually gone one step beyond to the point where DCYF feels the necessity of filing a petition in family court to establish legal custody for the children in a particular case. That's where family court involvement comes in. And as soon as any petition is filed in family court in a case such as this, there is an automatic referral to the CASA program.
Of those 27 kids, are they all out of their primary home, or are they... there's still some kids in their families?
There are children who are still in their home, and there are a number of reasons for that. But we represent children who are both out of home placements, which could include foster homes, congregate care settings such as group homes, or even institutionalized or hospitalized. There are children who could be at Bradley Hospital long term. We take care of children in those situations as well. So there's a variety. And then there are children who are still at home with their biological parents. There's a degree of dysfunction that required DCYF to step in and seek legal custody of the children in the home. But because they're working toward reunification and the healthy functioning of that family with the oversight of DCYF in the interim, the children are kept there as long as there's an assessment that the immediate safety of the children is not going to be a huge concern.
Where typically do these referrals come from, or does somebody refer it to DCYF and then it ends up in court?
typically what happens is calls go to the hotline, the DCYF hotline, and then the process begins from there. They do have investigators who will investigate cases that come before them, and as it goes through a progression in the DCYF system, then it would make its way to family court. But typically, it's through the child abuse hotline, which is 1-800-RI-CHILD.
And do these usually come from the medical community, from schools? Where do you get the majority of those referrals?
I really can't speak to what those statistics are because we don't work for DCYF. They would have those statistics, but I do know that medical professionals often will call in because they will come into contact with children that they believe have been abused or neglected. The same is true with teachers. Teachers will call in. They're in frequent contact with children and get to know them quite well. But it could be anybody in the community who has a suspicion that a child, may have knowledge or a suspicion that a child is being neglected or abused in any way, which could include physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse.
Do you know how you can measure the number of cases or the number of complaints that may be filed versus the number of cases that actually involve neglect or abuse?
The proportion in Rhode Island, from the last figures that I saw, which reflected 2016 figures, it was just about 80% of the cases involved neglect. Those are far more common. Most of the remaining 20% relate to abuse of one kind or another.
What about cases that are or complaints that are filed that are unfounded? Any idea how many of those might be per year?
That I don't have that number. I want to say from figures I had seen recently, for the last year, I had seen, I believe it was somewhere in the vicinity of 10 to 11,000. But again, I don't have those figures. We don't work for DCYF. But I had seen figures. But I'm not sure of the accuracy of that. It's a large number, though.
So that's got to make it even more difficult when you have a number of cases that are that may not be falsely filed, but may be filed by somebody who may mean well, but in fact they have their facts wrong. And to be able to cull out those that in fact are actual cases.
Well, I think you're getting to, you know, one of the many challenges DCYF has. And so unfortunately, DCYF is demonized quite often. People hear about what happens to a child who has fallen through the cracks. There's a lot of blame laid at DCYF's feet, and I'm not going to talk about that, but what I really want to stress is it really is a reflection on how overburdened the system is. When you think about those thousands of calls coming in, DCYF having to sift through those and make judgments about which ones need further investigation, so they know how to directly focus their resources in the most effective way, it is a big challenge. And then you have caseworkers, of course, who have large caseloads. And so that's one of the reasons CASA came into existence in the first place. Part of the reason was because there was a family court judge out in Seattle, Washington, who realized he was making final judgments on many cases involving children he didn't know, and he wanted to know more about these children, strictly from the perspective of what is in their best interests. Child welfare agencies have responsibilities to not only the children in their cases, but also the families that they're serving as well. So that was part of it. But the other part of it really, is related to the fact that there are kids who fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to hold you there for a moment, Cheryl, because I wanted to talk about that, and that I think is a huge item. We're going to go to our break. When we come back, we're going to pick up on that.
As baby boomers age, there are so many potential issues and real concerns.
What's the best housing solution for our elderly?
Will we have enough money saved for retirement?
How do we maintain optimal health?
What sort of estate planning should we be doing?
How do we choose the best Medicare plan?
AM 1540 WADK wants to help. On the first and third Friday of each month from noon to 1, experts from a variety of fields gather to discuss all these issues and more relative to anyone 55 or over with aging parents on Elder Affairs. Tune in live to hear this expert advice or go to WADK.com for a podcast of the program under the Elder Affairs tab.
Brought to you by Bledham Newport, Law Offices of Silva, Thomas, Martland, and Offenberg, Chris Offenberg, Elder Law, Balance at Home, Carol Miller of Reverse Mortgage Funding, and Village House Nursing and Rehabilitation Center.
Well, it's that special time of year again. The days are getting a little longer. Clocks are moving forward. Those last patches of snow are disappearing. You know what that means. That's right. McKay's preseason sale on the world's best all-weather outdoor furniture. Imagine teak, all-weather wicker, cantilever umbrellas, even wrought iron and elegant cast aluminum. There are sofas, chairs, rockers, gliders, Adirondack chairs, and more. Don't forget hammocks and fire pits. This is the furniture for those staycation lifestyles. The front porch is fully restocked and ready to go. And now is the time for special orders. Best part, trip to McKay's front porch can make you feel like summer's just around the corner. McKay's and McKay's front porch in North Kingstown. The outdoor furniture you keep.
Get home repair and home improvement tips. Tune in to AM 1540 WADK weekday mornings at 8:45 to On the House with the Carey Brothers. Brought to you by Riverhead Building Supply with locations in Middletown and North Kingstown.
What we gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
The time has come once again for Mix Nyai 3 to take you back in the day with the third annual Mix Nyai 3 Old School Prom.
Yo, DJ, pump this party!
That's right, we are throwing it back to the good old days and letting you relive your prom on Friday, May 4th at the beautiful Atlantic Resort in Newport.
Sweet!
This year we are going bigger and better with a larger guest list and even more ways to win.
Oh my God, Becky, look at her.
But the only way you'll be able to dance to the greatest throwback tracks all night long is to win your way in. So make sure you listen every weekday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. for your 7 daily chances to win tickets to the most exclusive party of the year.
Go, Trey boy. It's your birthday.
You can also sign up on mix93.com for a daily chance to win your way in to our all old school costume party. Another way to register is to go to Facebook.com/Mix93 and let us know you want to go to the old school prom. So grab your best old school gear, come dress as your favorite throwback celebrity, or come dress for prom and meet us at the Atlantic Resort at 240 Aquinic Avenue in Middletown, Friday, May 4th at 7 p.m. for the third annual Mix 93 Old School Prom.
The third annual Mix 99.3 Old School Prom takes place Friday, May 4th at the Atlantic Resort Newport, located at 240 Aquitnik Ave in Middletown. And the third annual Mix 99.3 Old School Prom is brought to you by Cardi's Furniture and Mattresses, Riverhead Building Supply, and Whaley's Brewing Company.
Listen live, online, at WADK.com.
And welcome back to the Open Forum. My name is Frank Presence, and we're talking with Cheryl Martone, who is the director of the CASA program in Rhode Island. It's a court-appointed special advocates for children program, and a really critical program dealing with kids who are abused or neglected. We talked about, as we were leaving the last segment, about those kids who fall through the cracks. With 10,000, potentially 10,000 cases that are unfounded each year, and 2,700 that have validity, you've got to think that some of those, there's something to be said in terms of some of those 10,000 that maybe they just don't rise to the level of court involvement, or they just do fall through the cracks.
Well, those are cases that are determined to have not been valid, that have not have been judged by DCYF to involve instances of abuse or neglect.
So when you talk about falling through the cracks, what do you refer to?
Falling through the cracks is children who get kind of lost in the system, where they don't have the follow through and the services they're supposed to be provided, those kinds of things. What happens in the CASA program is the attorneys and social workers in our program and the volunteers who are so critical for us are monitoring those case plans and watching what's happening with the child. Where the unique aspect of the CASA program involves the volunteers. They are the only people who have the ability and time to go into the homes where the children are or the settings where they're living and actually see with their own eyes and hear with their own ears how that child is functioning. They can see how what the environment is in talking to the child and talking to the child's caretakers, service providers. They can get a comprehensive idea of just how the child is doing and what the needs of the child are. The volunteer also provides a voice for the child, too. There are kids who are old enough to understand that there's a judge in a courthouse somewhere who's going to make the final decision on what happens with their lives. And some of them really want the judges to know something about how they're feeling about what's happening to them, what concerns they have about their future. And our volunteers communicate that to the judges. And our judges really respect the reports that are given by the volunteers when they come into court because they do know that unique position that the volunteer has and the unique ability they have to represent to the court what's happening because they've seen it and heard it themselves, and they're actually relaying what the child has actually said as well.
Is each volunteer paired with a lawyer and a social worker?
The volunteers, well, we do have a few professional social workers employed in our program, and they take on the most complex cases. Some are very, very complicated. But the volunteers, they come from all kinds of backgrounds. They range in age from their early 20s up to their 80s. I think our most seasoned volunteer is in her mid-80s, and so a wide range of not only ages but also backgrounds from professions that are white collar, from blue collar vocations. We have people who are many people who are retired. There are a lot of people who come to us saying, "I've thought about volunteering for 5, 10, even 15 years." We've heard that quite often, but I had to either wait till I retired or wait until my children were grown. They've had it in the back of their minds for years that this is a unique way to make a very big difference in a child's life, but they wanted to make sure that they could focus their attention to do the best job they can.
What brings them to the program? There are a lot of programs out there that will deal with similar type situations, but maybe not necessarily tied to the courts. What brings them to CASA?
Well, we talk to our volunteers all the time when they come to our training about that, and when we interview them, we put them through through a comprehensive screening process. Each volunteer, before they enter our training program, has to go through a personal interview, both so we can get to know them, they can get to know more about us and make an informed decision about what they're agreeing to do. And oftentimes they say they like the fact that they're able to get to know a child over a period of time, that it's something that they can fit into their lives easily because the average CASA volunteer spends about 8 to 10 hours a month, not a week, but a month on their case. And they're able to make a really big difference for the child because what happens when the child's a subject of a case that's going through the court, that child's whole future is going to be decided, and that volunteer is bringing to the court information that nobody else can from the perspective that they are, and it makes a huge difference. So they're really drawn to that. They're drawn to the fact that they can make a big difference in the direction that the child's life can take. And because they are often, unfortunately, the one consistent adult in a child's life while they move through the foster care system, that's something that they find very appealing as well, that they can be that thread of, of someone that they can depend on. Unfortunately, nationally, I don't have the Rhode Island statistics, but I know that nationally, the average amount of time that a child will spend in foster care is 21 months, and during those 21 months, the average number of moves is 3. So it's not uncommon for children to be moved within the system.
We often hear about the foster care system. Do we look at that as an even system where they're getting consistently good attention, or is an uneven system where, in fact, we have certain situations where people may not be up to the standard that we hope?
There are, in terms of what's happening in the foster care system, you may have heard that we have a severe shortage of foster parents, and DCYF, I do know, is moving quite aggressively to try to recruit more foster parents. And so there's been a real effort to overhaul what they're doing there. And that's something that's definitely needed, because that's part of the problem, that there aren't enough foster homes for these children. And social workers need to find places for children. The preference is always to find a place that a child can live in over a long period of time so that they have some stability while they're away from their home, waiting to find out if they'll go back to their first home or if they'll have to move on to a different kind of permanency, such as adoption or a guardianship. Sometimes it has something to do, too, with the kind of placement as well, and that can also depend on, well, if there are kinship placements available. The preference is typically to try to find somebody that the child already knows, such as a family member who can take in the child, and that's not always something that can be done immediately. So there are a lot of reasons why these things happen.
How many volunteers do you have?
At the present time, we have a little over 200 volunteers. Not all are actively engaged now. We do allow our volunteers to take leave of absence if they have to for personal reasons. We have about 150 who are active right now, and we just finished training a class of 11 new volunteers that we're bringing on as well, and so we're really looking forward to that. It's a very unique opportunity to make a huge difference in a child's life, but it's also a big commitment as well. We do ask that our volunteers pledge 18 months to us, because that's the average amount of time it takes for a case to go through the court system, and we want to make sure that a child will have a consistent adult with them during that time.
And we should be clear that, you know, this is just not Providence. It is all over the state. We have courthouses
Absolutely.
All over the state.
Absolutely. This program covers the entire state. There are four courthouses throughout the state, and we cover all of them. And we have seen an increase in our numbers and certainly in the filings that have been taking place recently for a number of reasons, but one of them certainly is the opioid epidemic. That's really created quite a stress on the child welfare system that was already overburdened to begin with, but we've seen a big impact. For instance, I think a lot of people wouldn't be all that surprised to find out that there are a large number of cases in the Providence County area. But one of the areas where we've seen a significant jump in new filings is in Washington County, which includes Narragansett, North and South Kingstown, the whole Charahoe area, Westerly. So it's really surprising. There's been such a large jump there.
You've been around for about 40 years, I guess. If the program was founded in 78, and if Rhode Island was second on board, I would assume Rhode Island was back in 78. Do you ever have any people who come back to the program as volunteers who had actually gone through the system?
Absolutely. We have had some people who were children in the system who had had exposure to CASA or had had their lives changed in some way because of CASA. I can think of one young man who trained with us 2 years ago, and that was his specific reason. He really wanted to pay it forward. He was a child who had a very unique educational need, and one of the attorneys in our program had advocated strenuously for this child to have an opportunity to go to the school that fit his needs. The judge did grant that, and the child was able to go to the school, and this child is one of many that have aged out of the foster care system. So this young man now is on his own, but he's going to college, he's supporting himself, and felt he had a debt of gratitude to pay to the CASA program and was really happy to get involved and try to help another child.
We're coming down to the end of our time. I wanted to make sure people knew how they could get involved and where they could learn more about the program.
I'll give a phone number. They can call 401-458-3330.
And the website?
Pardon?
The website?
And well, we do have that's a little difficult because it's a very long address that you have to put in the search bar, but
you know what? I'm going to make it easy. So I googled CASA, CASA Rhode Island, and it gets me right there. So that's probably the easiest way.
And absolutely.
And the phone number 458-3330. If people want to get involved, Cheryl, I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and I just think the work that you do is so incredibly important.
Well, thank you so much, Frank. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And now we're going to go to our break.
Your friends at the Brick Alley Pub and Restaurant have been longtime supporters and promoters of shopping local. It's a philosophy and a tradition that simply makes sense. The Brick Alley hopes everyone will remember to shop and dine local all year round. Here's another tradition that always makes sense, a Brick Alley gift card. A perfect fit for any occasion, the Brick Alley Pub and Restaurant, 140 Thames Street, downtown Newport. Online at brickalley.com, and you can find them on Facebook.
This is Pamela Pantos, Executive Director of the Newport Music Festival, and I would like to welcome you to the 50th anniversary season from July 4th through the 22nd. Concerts include the winner of the Van Cliburn Piano Competition, Yaquan Sunwoo, Imani Wins, and Joshua Bell. Please go to newportmusic.org for information on the concerts, performers, venues, and you can even listen to music clips before purchasing your tickets. We hope that you will join us.
Here in Rhode Island, we have a long history with cooperatives, from farm co-ops, shellfish co-ops, to education co-ops. Hi, I'm Ellen Ford, President and CEO of People's Credit Union, one of the oldest banking cooperatives in Rhode Island. A co-op involves many people working toward a common goal, and at People's Credit Union, we will work with you to provide solutions for your family's financial success. If you're looking for a banking partner, People's has it all. Why? Because at People's Credit Union, we think of you as family. Check us out at peoplescu.com.
Member NCUA.
People's Credit Union is proud to share the spotlight with these fine area businesses.
Always the best in selection, values, and service. The time-honored tradition continues at Fifth Ward Liquor. Stop by anytime to see Seth and the gang and enjoy the Fifth Ward tradition. Fifth Ward Liquor, 695 Lois Thames, Newport, 847-4545.
Get the latest news 24/7 at WADK.com. 1540 WADK. WADK.
Now, you want to talk about an introduction. That's about as good as I can get. Oh, you know what? Ryan Belmore is going to join me this next half hour. It wasn't for you, Ryan. There was no way that was for you.
Here I am.
Just a couple of real quick things first. Both Ryan and I are really delighted that Bob Angel and Greg Gizzi are going to be out at Cardine's Field at 4:30. The wind whipping, the temperatures dropping as they broadcast the Rodgers versus Paul Cuffey game. I think it's really unfair. Rodgers is going to go out there with the whole team, and he's going to catch one guy, Paul Cuffey.
Look at that.
You know,
one of the great things we do here on WEDK is bring you local sports, and Bob Angel is finally able to get out there after a couple. I think he had a snow cancellation, a rain cancellation, and now he's trying. You know, he's shaking already.
If you hear it, you could probably hear his teeth chattering during the broadcast.
There are so many jokes I can go
with
there.
I know, and I'm not going there either.
No, but, you know, and I think he was hoping for a cold cancellation, but he's not going to get it.
He got a cold cancellation, all right.
He'll be out there broadcasting, and you can listen to that right on WADK as well as on WADK.com. Actually, what time is the game?
The game is at 4:30.
4:30. You can listen to that right on 1540 AM or on WADK.com.
I guess, I don't know if he's going to interview Paul after the game. But I don't know. We'll see. So another sports thing I wanted to mention, and I'm sure everybody has seen who's interested in sports, that the University of Rhode Island has named its successor to Dan Hurley, who has left for the University of Connecticut, and they named David Fox, who is the I think his title was associate head coach, and elevated him to head coach. I think that's a great decision by the university, and it will help them. He, I guess, really was the guy who did a lot of the recruiting. 5-year contract worth $700,000 a year. Ryan, that's what, just a little bit less than you get here?
Just a little bit. I think the benefits are better here, and they make up for the costs.
Oh, good, good. And so that's about, you know what? That's considerably lower than what Dan Hurley got, and I believe that they get a buyout from UConn as well. So,
you know, and people are going to look at that because 700,000, he's going to be in the top 10 highest paid in, Rhode Island State employees.
Probably going to be in the top two.
Yes, because I know Hurley was a million. And, you know, a lot of people, I saw some of our mutual friends barking on social media about, oh, how do they dare think about paying him more?
I just had this vision of them standing out in front of the station barking, but that's okay.
Yes. And, you know, people, oh, how do you dare pay him $2 million or whatever there was thoughts on paying him. And, all right, you got to get away from the state employee part and think about how much that program, the men's basketball team, does for, or a good sports program does for any school. So think about how much Rhode Island got talked about. I was listening to a program earlier today, a national program, and they're talking about the University of Rhode Island.
That's right.
And the tourism, the economic impact, I would love to see a study done on, under Dan Hurley, what they think the economic impact of having a successful basketball program is on the state of Rhode Island.
So I can't give you numbers, but I'll go back a number of years when I was at Providence Business News, and I interviewed John Calipari, who was the head coach at UMass. You know, he's gone on now to a tremendous career in Kentucky, and Blanchard, the one-minute manager. And Calipari said to me, he said, you know, our legislature would go overboard in supporting the PC Friars over the University of Rhode Island. And he said, you know, every time they mention the University of Rhode Island, they're mentioning Rhode Island. Every time they mention the Friars, they're not mentioning Rhode Island at all. And the benefits of that happening on a continual basis are incredible for the state. It creates our whole image in the state. We have to remake our image. If you look at Cinerizer, because I was going to hop on a couple of things, but I took a look at the governor has talked about this Business Insider survey that said we had the ninth most robust economy in the nation. That was in March. So she cherry picked that particular survey when there were two others in March also out of Business Insider. One was of the 15 U.S. states where young people are moving. Moving in, jobs are plentiful and business is booming. Of those 15, do you know where Rhode Island finished?
I'm going to guess number 13.
Not at all.
Okay.
Number 13 was New Hampshire. Number 5 was Massachusetts. Rhode Island did not make the cut. And then there was another one that said the states where American dream could become a reality, ranked from the most likely to the least. And they looked at economic opportunity, they looked at equality, and they looked at affordability, and Rhode Island was 34th on that list. Our economic opportunity was 23. Our equality was 30th, which is really very disturbing to me, and our affordability 42nd. So we need to work on our image, and part of that is when you get back to the coach from Rhode Island, and having a really successful program, that works on our image. It does a great deal to bring attention, particularly to an audience that may be looking at it. In fact, their recruiting class, I think, much is as a result of this Cox, is like the considered the 30th best in the nation this year.
All right.
So
out of 300 and something schools,
yeah,
or so?
No. I mean, they turn the program around. It looks like it'll be there.
Well, a successful program. All of a sudden, you have all these people coming to games down at the Ryan Center.
Right. And
one of the best names in sports.
And the Ryan Center is getting an awful lot of exposure. And, you know, yeah, I think it was sport. I think CBS was a sport, right?
No, Ryan Center, I was a fan of, yes.
Ryan, yes, but Ryan was from CBS.
But it brings a lot of people down to URI, yeah, and it helps offset whatever other costs. And, you know, people have to look at, when you're looking at ways the state can save money, I don't think it should be at the end of the day with your head basketball coach, one of the more successful programs in the nation, and very successful there.
That has tremendous tremendous ramifications to the entire university, as does if you look at PC and what Cooley has done up at PC. He's done an incredible job. PC is at the forefront of a lot of these things, and it's just tremendous. You know, it was interesting this morning. I went to an event of one of the larger organizations in Rhode Island?
Oh, let me guess here.
Well,
one of the larger organizations in Rhode Island. What is a large organization I can think of here?
State legislature. Nope, that's not it.
CVS.
Nope, that's not it either.
Hasbro.
Nah, you're not even coming close.
All right, go ahead. ACI.
ACI. I went to visit some of my old neighbors.
Okay.
But I'm not going to name the organization. There was a group of us who have been brought together to take a look at the future as we look out. And I'm sitting in this group that's dealing with, you know, how do we make this more appealing to alumni, dealing with community. And I'm listening to this. Our group was 15. And I'm listening to people talk about things that are just insular. What kind of programs? How can we draw alumni in to the programs that the organization is doing? How can we convince people who are older to maybe put this organization in their will for some support? What they didn't do is they didn't take a look and say, and I actually mentioned that, so hopefully we will, is what this organization is doing for Rhode Island, how we're looking beyond that particular community out to the community as a whole. People, I think, and it goes to universities, it goes to everybody else, need to feel that what they do or what they're affiliated with has value beyond themselves. So that means somehow doing or being involved in things that are really beneficial to the community. And, hopefully they'll do that. But it told me something that here were some very, very bright people who were sitting there and not looking beyond their own involvement. And, they were very committed to this organization. This organization has well over 2,000 alums, and, there were 70 people, which meant that there were a lot of people who weren't alums. And those are the people you need to get involved in the program. So. I think that's kind of critical as we look forward. So, again, good for the University of Rhode Island. And I guess I saw the other day an interview with some of the current players and an interview with at least one of the incoming players, and they all said that they were committed to staying at Rhode Island.
Well, that's good.
That's, you know, it's always a danger that they're gonna look when there's a change of a coach, that they look to move elsewhere. In this case, this is apparently the guy who recruited them, so they're going to stick around.
And, you know, there was a erroneous report out there saying that we may see Patino coming back to the Ocean State here.
You might. He's going to be driving through to Maine or something.
That's it. And I had heard an interview this morning, and, yeah, I'll give credit here. It was on the Dan Patrick Show, a nationally syndicated, of course, Dan Patrick, ESPN former. And first thing he mentioned, and this is where I come to mentions of Rhode Island, there was a report that you might take over University of Rhode Island, and, you know, he must have mentioned the state of Rhode Island 5-10 times. But Patino says he has never spoken to the athletic director. He has never spoken to anybody at URI except possibly when he coached for Providence and they played there. He said that his agent had never spoken. There was no discussion, he says, of him going to URI. URI also came out earlier this week and said absolutely there was never a deal, never an option. So unfortunately, you know.
So here's what I think happened, and this is all speculation on my part. So this website, if you will, in the northern part of the state, read an article that I read and everybody else read that Rick Pitino was talking about wanting to get back into coaching. So somebody just speculated that here was a job opening that he might have wanted, so they wrote a story and speculated on it. But the thing that they also said that Dooley, the president of URI, was the one who nixed the deal. Just sounded really strange from the beginning.
It made it sound like somebody was actually in the room and saw the plan or heard that the plan got nixed, and without naming sources or anything of the sort. It was,
those are the things that that give a little bit of a black eye to journalism.
Well, I'm going to give you a black eye if we don't take a break right now. How's that?
Well, no, yeah, oh, yeah, okay.
All right.
We'll be back.
This is Kurt Edenbach. Our family and the staff of Memorial Funeral Homes have been helping families on Aquidneck Island honor their loved ones for three generations. It is our belief that every life deserves to be honored and celebrated. A memorial or funeral service can be a time to reflect, honor, and celebrate a person's relationships and achievements and their life well lived. Honoring the deceased helps the living. The funeral directors at Memorial Funeral Homes will listen to your wishes, provide professional advice, and help you to create the appropriate ceremony to celebrate the life and memory of your loved one. Whether simple or elaborate, traditional or one of a kind, the final tribute is an important first step in recovering from loss. Memorial Funeral Home has locations in Newport and Portsmouth and operates their own crematory. We are the only cremation with confidence provider in the county. For more information, contact us at the funeral home at 846-0698 or online at memorialfuneralhome.com.
I'm Bob Mastin. I founded Custom House Coffee in 2002. We started roasting from day one. When I founded the business, I really wanted to make sure that we could be competitive with other upscale coffee places. What I decided was that I really had to offer the freshest fresh roasted coffee. We roast every day, sometimes more than once a day, on two different machines now. I started with one machine, but we have two. We have about 60 wholesale accounts, so that's one of the reasons we're roasting so frequently. But we also sell 20, 30 pounds of coffee a day retail to people who brew coffee at home. We also have a dedicated wholesale line if anyone wants to order beans wholesale, like a bed and breakfast or a restaurant. The wholesale line is 401-842-0285. Custom House Coffee, 796 Aquidneck Avenue in Middletown. Our website is customhousecoffee.com.
Many of us do at least some of our work at home, and for some of us, the office is at home.
There is a standard deduction now that one can take for the home office, or a simplified deduction, or you can go through and take a higher amount if you can support it that would be based on square footage of the office in your home.
Tax accountant Janice Heyman says, yep, it is a little complicated, and the IRS website can explain in detail how the deductions work. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
A good tax preparer can help you save on taxes, but real saving starts long before you file. With the new tax laws, decisions you make year-round can impact what you pay. The right financial planner makes all the difference. Hearst Financial Independence Planning has been advising clients on taxes and more for over 30 years. They take the time to listen to what's important to you and then help you make the right decisions. Call 508-636-3595 or go to HIRSTFIP.com. Advisory services offered by CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Corrigan Financial realizes the need for financial planning services has never been greater, due in part to essential concerns such as longer life expectancies, spending demands, and income tax and estate planning. Corrigan Financial believes everyone needs a financial plan and that all financial decisions should be made within the context of that planning framework. Currently, Corrigan Financial works with over 950 families, manages over $600 million of investment assets, and prepares income tax returns for nearly all their clients. Corrigan Financial's knowledgeable staff includes 11 CPAs, many with advanced degrees and financial planning specific designations. These people, along with considerable investments in systems and technology, have helped keep Corrigan Financial at the forefront of the wealth management profession. Corrigan Financial, for more than 25 years, helping their clients get from where they are to where they want to be.
Well, I got to tell you, it surely doesn't live up to the last segment.
No, that introduction was pretty good. I've been noticing some new music on there. Hey, Frank, let me tell you, the Paul Cuffey School, because yeah. I didn't know, and we try to be about education here.
I know exactly where they are.
Well,
on Promenade Street in Providence.
I do not know that. It is a maritime charter school for Providence youth. How cool is that?
Yeah, they're sailing along. Then what are they doing? What are they doing playing baseball?
Well, it is part of their academics and their school life, I assume. And the reason we bring them up is why, Frank?
Because Bob Angel and Greg Gizzi are going to be broadcasting the Rogers versus Paul Cuffey baseball game at 4:30 today at Cardines Field. If you're in the vicinity, come by with a cup of coffee for Angel and Gizzy, who might be a little bit cold out there.
What is it they say when you get older, your blood thins and you get colder easier?
Angel's beyond that already.
Okay. But you can listen to that broadcast. One of the great things we do here on W80K for many years is bring you local sports. And Bob and Greg will be bringing you that on 1540 AM as well as on W80K.com.
Hey, so we've got some crazy legislative stuff, but I really want to get to something else because you have a really important show coming up for the radio edition of What's Up.
I'll tell you what, I go from being very serious some days to you saying, you know what, let's get Daffy.
Yeah, this is going to be about daffodils. And, of course, you have that daffodil expert joining you, Timmy Tui.
Timmy Tui has been a daffodil expert. He went to St. George's, and after St. George's, he went and got a degree in daffodils.
Daffodil? Yeah.
So he's a daffodilian expert.
So I want you to sound really good, all right? I want you to know the facts.
Well, let me tell you who else is joining us first.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I have Timmy Tui, who is my co-host on Thursdays, and he is walking in to, or he's using his crutches to get in today.
He can't even bend down and pick a daffodil.
He can't, or
now.
Plant them. But he is my co-host, and you know, him and I are going to be joined by John Hirschbeck, who is Mr. Daffodil. He is in charge of the Daffodilian Project.
We'll see if you can stump him on these.
Ooh, all right, stump. I like that.
We've got some facts here that I want you to, you know, pick one or two out.
Ooh, pick. Another good pun.
Daffodil is the official common name for any plant that falls under the genus Narcissus.
Okay.
Including jonquils, paper whites, and others. But most people use the term daffodil to refer to the familiar trumpet-shaped springtime blossoms. So you might ask him about the jonquils.
Okay, jonquils. Yeah, jonquils. Got it.
If you hear someone in England mention Lent lilies, they're referring to daffodils.
Okay, they have Lent lily festival. So it would be Newport Lent lily festival or Lent lillian.
Yeah, well, keep going.
Okay.
All right, now this is really important. Gifting a bouquet of daffodils is believed to ensure happiness to the recipient.
I believe that.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper than roses.
Do not pick them from your neighbor's yard.
It's happiness for the recipient and happiness for the purchaser.
It is. And but, you know what you're giving people the idea of is they know there's 900,000 of them out right there in Newport. Yeah. Do not pick them from there.
Well, here it is, though. Don't just pick one, because legend has it that presenting only one single daffodil means bad luck may be on the horizon.
Really?
Yeah, so keep that in mind.
I wonder where they come up with that, because one rose is supposed to be...
But one daffodil is not equal to one rose.
Okay. All right.
Daffodils could flower for anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months, depending on growing conditions. And then they'll come back the next year, too. Let the plant rebuild its bulb and cut the leaves off only when they begin to yellow.
Yes, and John Hirschbeck would.
Oh, and here's a question for you. Where is the daffodil the national flower?
Where is it?
Yeah.
You mean what state is it from?
Well, maybe in the country.
I'm going to say Holland.
I'm going to say Wales.
And you have the answer in front of you.
That's right. So I think I'm right.
All right.
And if you spot the first daffodil of the season in Wales, oh, here you go. This is really important. We should fly over to Wales right away. If you spot the first daffodil of the season in Wales, your next year will supposedly be filled with wealth.
Okay.
Yeah. There are at least 25 different daffodil species and up to 13,000 hybrids. According to there's a daffodil data bank. You can put that on the computer, daffodil data bank.
Okay.
You know, I'm telling you, this is going to be a dynamite interview here.
It will be. We're going to learn how close they are to a million daffodils.
Yeah. They're the official 10th wedding anniversary flower.
Okay.
Did you know that?
I did not know that because I am not married. Did you know that? Did you present Mrs. Prosnitz with a daffodil?
I'm going to do that. Not one. I'll give her a whole bouquet of daffodils.
It's been longer than 10 years.
Yeah. So here we go. Now, this is really important. Tradition holds that if a daffodil is forced to bloom for the Chinese New Year, it will bring luck to the whole household.
Okay.
You know?
Great.
I think that's important. Daffodils contain sap that's often poisonous to other plants. If you want to mix them with other flowers in a vase, soak them in water for 24 hours, first to remove the sap. Oh, this is really good. Squirrels won't eat daffodils due to these poisonous crystals. Be careful to keep them away from dogs as well. Number 14 here is daffodils are surprisingly tolerant to cold, and they're an ideal flower for novice gardeners in most regions of the U.S.
Yeah, I would think they're pretty simple because obviously they're planted all throughout the city, and it doesn't take much.
Yeah, and that's it. That's it. I just had 14. I thought there were 15. But, you know, those are pretty good facts. Well, now, wait, we have 9 fun facts about daffodils that we ought to take a look at as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah, coming up here, let's see. The fun facts. Who were they named after? Do you know who they were named after?
I do not.
They were named after a Greek myth.
Ooh.
You might hear daffodils called by their Latin name, Narcissus. They got this name from a Greek myth about a handsome young man named Narcissus. He was given his great beauty by the gods with the condition that he never look at a reflection of himself. Eventually, he couldn't resist and gazed at himself in a shimmering lake. The gods turned him into a daffodil.
All right.
I like that one.
My love for this information blossoms every minute.
I'm sure. Daffodils were first cultivated where?
In Wales.
Ancient Rome.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I hope you're writing this stuff down.
I am.
Good. Let's see. Daffodils have many uses throughout history. Ancient Greeks farmed and dried daffodils are used as a disinfectant. Daffodils remained in use well into Victorian times when a paste made from powdered daffodil roots and roasted barley were applied to heal warts, scars, and scabs. They were also believed to magically protect an area from malignant forces and help clear negativity. In medieval times, aristocratic women used yellow dye from the flowers to tint their hair and eyebrows. And in the Middle East, juice in the wild daffodil was used as a cure for baldness. I'll have to consult my bald spot and see whether that works.
Yes.
Daffodils are lucky unless you're a poultry farmer. In Wales, it is said that if you see the first daffodil of the season, the next 12 months will bring you wealth. Well, we knew that. And let's go to the next one. Daffodils are the 10th wedding anniversary flower. We knew that. Cut daffodils can't be mixed with other flowers. We knew that as well. Oh, daffodils may help treat cancer. Daffodils have long been used for cancer treatment. Around 400 BC, Hippocrates recommended a pessary made with narcissus oil to treat uterine tumors. Ancient Romans also used daffodils to treat various forms of cancer. In modern times, a 2010 study discovered a natural compound in daffodil bulbs called narcissocene that may combat aggressive forms of brain cancer. Narcissocene appears to inhibit the proliferation of cancer cells but has no adverse effects on normal cells.
Wow.
Researchers are working on bringing a drug containing narcissocene, I guess it is, to market within a few years. If that is true, that's pretty remarkable.
That would be pretty remarkable. I've got to tell you what, though. My show is going to be much more fascinating than this coming up in just a few minutes here.
Well, here's my belief that you're not going to remember any of this because daffodils contain a compound used to treat Alzheimer's. And, and so this may affect your memory. In any event, it goes on. It should be a fun show.
Yes. Timmy Tuohy, John Hirschback coming up on What's Up Noop Radio Edition. Frank, what do you get when you cross a flower with a pickle?
I don't have a clue.
A daffodil.
A daffodil. Very good.
All right.
Very good.
Coming up next, Ryan Belfort in the What's Up Noop Radio Edition. I promise it will be interesting. It will be fun.
I can't wait to listen to this.
Oh, yes. Fascinating. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you for listening.